Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. On Tuesday, the Army provided a notice of intent to Congress to grant the Dakota Access Pipeline easement. Today, many await further development on this, including the hundreds of people who are taking their stand against this pipeline on the ground near the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. In the next hour, we turn to these voices and to those who have set foot on these grounds to find out what these camps have meant and how they've evolved over time, and we hope you'll join us by calling in right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is denouncing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' plan to grant an easement to the Dakota Access Pipeline. On Tuesday, the Army provided notice to Congress that it intends to issue the easement for completion of the project in North Dakota. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has vowed to fight it in court. Robert Taken Alive is a tribal council representative.
You know, we're a federally recognized tribe. We're identified as a treaty tribe. And in those documents, we're afforded a process according to their law, the federal law, and that process needed to and has to be adhered to.
Shortly after taking office in January, President Trump issued a memo to expedite the pipeline project. In an ABC News video, Trump says he has not had one call complaining about Dakota Access. Taken Alive says Trump needs to consult with the tribe.
You know, as tribal people, we are very respectful. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, we're timid. That doesn't mean any of that. What that means is that we're looking at some type of humanity. This isn't a dictatorial government here in the United States. It's a democracy. The piece that he feels that he needed to get phone calls is wrong. He needed to come out to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and meet with the tribal council.
The tribe is asking its allies to stay in peace and prayer, adding that the battle against the pipeline needs to be taken to politicians and be in court. Supporters of the project have expressed they're pleased with the news the project is moving forward, including two North Dakota U.S. lawmakers who say the nation needs new energy infrastructure. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, the Seattle City Council voted to cut ties with Wells Fargo Bank because of its role as a financier of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Members of the Native American community sang an honor song, then proceeded with public comments, including Matt Rimley, who's from Standing Rock.
Moments ago, the Army Corps stated they're going to grant that easement to construct this pipeline. What's timely about this is Seattle has the opportunity, you all have the opportunity to send that immediate response and say no.
City councilors say they want a relationship with a socially responsible bank. Council member Deborah Juarez.
In short, we have addressed a perennial social justice issue head on by looking forward and backward to develop a process to divest, terminate, or economically punish those that engage in acts that violate or are inconsistent with the views and policies of our great city.
More than $3 billion of the city's funds are cycled through the bank. A statement by Wells Fargo to the Seattle PI states it's disappointed in the city's decision and stands ready to do business in the future. In Canada, the probe into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls will provide a way for people to share their stories. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The head of the commission, Marion Buller, made the comments at a news conference in Ottawa, alongside other members of the inquiry and its legal team. There have been growing questions about the status of the inquiry. Buller says she understands there is anxiety from people who want to see the formal hearings begin. But she says the commission would be neglecting its responsibilities if it did not ensure things were set up properly in advance of the hearings.
We're very much aware of the impatience and the frustration felt by families and organizations. We share those same feelings because there's nothing that we'd like to do more than to get the hearings underway. But we also know we have to do our work in a thoughtful and purposeful way.
The national inquiry is still on track to begin in a few months. It will be flexible, with commissioners able to get information which might not otherwise be admissible as evidence in a court. The two-year inquiry will cost more than $50 million. Its mandate is to examine the systemic causes of violence against Indigenous women and girls. But the commissioners will also be able to hear from Indigenous men and boys who might have something relevant to say. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The Army Corps of Engineers has wrapped up its review of the Dakota Access Pipeline project. Yesterday, the Army provided the notice of intent to Congress that the pipeline easement to bore the Dakota Access Pipeline under the Missouri River will be granted. This comes as a blow to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, as well as thousands of other people who have rooted themselves at the prayer camps in North Dakota in the name of stopping the pipeline at one time or other. People first started erecting tents and teepees in the area of the Dakota Access Pipeline project on land near the Standing Rock Reservation on April 1st of last year. Other camps were also erected, including the Oshete Sakoan and Rosebud Camp. Tribal hubs from many other Native nations were also established in the area. Donations of money, food, supplies, and prayers poured in since the beginning. And these camps have become a way of life for many people. And the number of people has dwindled. Severe winter weather and safety concerns by the tribe have also prompted people to leave. Standing Rock officials and others are working to clear out Oshete Sakoan, but there are also people who still remain, and calls for a renewed occupation of the area has gone out since President Donald Trump's order to expedite permits to complete the pipeline went public, and even more of the call yesterday. And if you have a perspective you'd like to share, we want to hear it. The phone lines are open now. Anything you want to share about latest developments, what it means to be stepping on the ground of these camps, and maybe even how they've evolved. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also our Twitter handle if you'd like to send us a tweet. We look forward to hearing from you. And right now we're going to go to Washington, D.C., to check in with Dave Archambault II. He's the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. It is our pleasure to welcome Chairman back to the hour. Chairman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Chairman, in light of recent developments yesterday, the announcement coming from the Army, what would you like to say about the tribe's position and next steps?
Well, you know, what we were doing was, what I was doing, I was trying to come out here and get in front of the decision. I knew that we had a status conference with the judge, Judge Boasberg, and he asked the Department of Justice when will they come out with a decision on what they're going to do about the president's memorandum. And the Department of Justice said they were going to plan on Friday this week to come out with a decision on what's the next steps, what they were going to do. And so I figured nothing was going to happen until this Friday, and I wanted to visit with the White House. I had got a call into William Kirkland, the Intergovernmental Affairs Office in the White House, and just to try to get some discussion going, because we were unsuccessful at every attempt to try to meet with the Trump administration. We finally got some traction last week with William Kirkland, and I set up a meeting for this Monday. He called and said, we can't meet until Wednesday. And I said, that's fine, because I knew that the Department of Justice and had returned information saying they won't make a decision until Friday. Well, I feel slighted, because I landed yesterday to meet with the White House, and also I was trying to set up meetings with the Department Army. They didn't return any calls. So today they called and said, yeah, we can meet if you want to meet. It goes to show that this administration and the Department Army is new, very well what was going to happen yesterday, and they completely left me on loop. But that's just kind of how things have been going for the past 2 years. We've always been trying to get information to the White House, to the Army, letting them know the wrongs of this infrastructure project. And it took us 2 years to finally reach the Obama administration. With all the efforts at all fronts, we were successful in just trying to get an environmental impact statement. And now that's being reversed. So this government is flip-flopping again. And that's not anything new to Indian country. So we understand that, and we're going to continue to look at all the legal aspects, our legal options of this argument that we have. And I don't feel like the President of the United States has the authority or the ability to circumvent federal law. And what he's doing is he's preventing safety for people and looking at ways to contaminate Earth for corporate world. He's taking the corporate interest at hand, and he's forgetting about people, and money's driving this guy. And I don't think he's the one who's making the decisions. I think the Koch brothers are. The oil industry is going to dictate how this country is run in the next 4 years. So we have to get ready. Tribes across this country have to be ready for what's to come. And we have to make sure we protect the future of our children and make sure we have our rights at the forefront. He's going to attack our healthcare system, our education system, our safety. He's going to, you know, we have to be united and move forward in all fronts, because what's to come is not going to be good.
And Chairman, I want to share some audio with you. The president spoke on this yesterday. At the White House, he mentioned the Dakota Access Pipeline. He indicated that he hasn't personally heard any complaints about the project.
I don't even think it was controversial. You know, I proved them. I haven't even heard. I haven't had one call from anybody saying, oh, that was a terrible thing you did. I haven't had one call. You know, usually if I do something, it's like bedlam, right? I haven't had one call from anybody. And, you know, we've got a lot of jobs. In the Keystone case, we have potentially 32,000 jobs almost immediately. And then, as you know, I did the Dakota pipeline. And nobody called up to complain because it was unfair. Years of getting approvals. Nobody showed up to fight it. This company spends a tremendous hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And then all of a sudden, people show up to fight it. It's not fair to our companies. And I think everyone's going to be happy in the end, okay?
And that was President Donald Trump yesterday speaking to reporters. Any thoughts on what you just heard? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Chairman, your response to what we just heard?
Well, he's not taking any calls. We've been trying to reach his administration. It wasn't until last week that we got back from the Intergovernmental Affairs Office that we can be heard. And so for him to say he's not getting calls or hearing complaints, he's only listening to a handful of people. And that's who's driving this from North Dakota is Congressman Kramer, Senator Heitkamp, Senator Hoeven. They have personal interest for this pipeline to go through. They're not looking out for the people in North Dakota or all the people in North Dakota. And the jobs that he's talking about, there's not going to be thousands of jobs for Dakota Access Pipeline. There's 60 permanent jobs when this thing's complete. So we're putting people's lives, we're putting the environment at risk for 60 permanent jobs. And I don't think he's getting all the information when he makes decisions. And he's being really, really selective on who he's willing to listen to. If he was willing to listen to anybody, and for him to say he didn't know this wasn't going to be controversial, he's not paying attention to the news. He's not paying attention to the world. He's only worried about his own tweets and the reaction to those tweets. We even sent tweets to him, and he ignores. It's called selective listening when he says he hasn't heard anything. And it's unfortunate because I think a real leader would be taking into consideration all concerns before you make a decision. He's not. He's only looking at the corporation. And you can obviously tell he only heard the corporation because he says, they lost a lot of money in trying to do this. They, and it's not fair to them. Well, it's not fair to us either, but he isn't willing to listen to us. So there is always two sides, and then there's a third side, and that's the truth. And it's obvious that he's not willing to admit to the wrongs.
And Chairman, any thoughts on, at one time, the Army Corps of Engineers understood that it was important to hear the tribal voice and even entertain alternate routes. And the same people who were there, from my knowledge, are the same ones who are pushing this forward and heeding orders from the president. What's your thought on the flip-flop?
The Corps of Engineers took the initiative to say, you know what, maybe we should stop and let's take a look at what an oil spill would do to a tribal nation. Let's take a look at this infrastructure project, and so let's slow down and do an environmental impact statement. And it gave us an opportunity to demonstrate. We have been paying for this, and the Corps of Engineers knows this. We have been paying for economic development. We have been paying for infrastructure, energy independence, and national security for the past century, and the cost is still borne by us. But and we were able to share that information with the Corps of Engineers. We were not able to share that with the president. And before he even got into office, we've been reaching out, trying to meet with him. We had different fronts to try to get with him to help him understand what the issues are. And for it's just frustrating that he's not willing to listen, and then to say that we didn't hear anything. But the Corps of Engineers, they all knew what was going on. And for them not to pass information on, and that's why I think it's very important that the federal laws should not say, let's consult. The federal laws should say, let's get consent from indigenous peoples before we pass any infrastructure project approvals, especially if it's going to affect treaty lands or indigenous people's rights, indigenous people's lands. It's something that needs to happen in the future. And that's something that we need to come together, tribal nations need to come together in a unified front and say, well, no longer is consultation good enough because it's misinterpreted. It's real simple and real basic. You need to get consent. And I know there will be tribal nations that will give consent if there's a benefit to them. But if there's no benefit to them, and it only brings harm to a nation, then we need to say no. We need to say we don't want this because it's been happening to us over and over and over. And for us to try to talk to people, lower level people, it doesn't do any good. We should have government to government relationship. Government to government meaning tribal leadership meeting with the president himself and informing him. And that's one thing that President Obama did, was he took time to meet with tribal leaders and to have open discussion and to hear and to listen. Even if there was something that we don't agree with the Obama administration, at least he was willing to hear us. This president is not willing to hear. He's willing to listen to corporate world because it's money driven by money. And not people. And we're here to protect our environment. We're here to protect our people.
And Chairman, yesterday the tribe issued a statement and the stance, and many of which you've shared today. One of the points, next steps that have been painted out, it says if DAPL, DAPL, is successful in constructing and operating the pipeline, the tribe will seek to shut the pipeline operations down. Can you interpret that for me, please?
We're going to go to court. We understand that court, the judicial system, sometimes takes time, and it may not get a ruling in our favor the first time or the second time, but we're going to continue to pursue to shut the pipeline down if it is if it moves forward and does start the flow of oil. We still believe that it is a detrimental to our people and our nation, and regardless of where it's at and the stages of completion are completed, that's going to be our goal, is to continue to work at that. And that's a risk for the company. The risk to the company should be heard, especially by the people who fund projects like this, the banks or the lenders or the investors or the organizations that are looking at infrastructure projects. this is a huge risk for them. Now, when they don't meet deadlines, it's up to those organizations, banks, lenders, investors to put pressure on the project and say, get it away from the tribal nations, because we don't want to lose our resources. We don't want to invest in bad companies. We don't want this perception portrayed on us. And that's what you're starting to see now, is this divesting in bad companies. And that's where America, that's where the individual people have some say when it's what's driving this administration, what's driving this government, what drives our congressional representatives is the money, the industries. So if we can impact the money in one way or another through divesting, then that's what we have to do. And I don't think that I don't look at this as being the end. I look at it as a beginning, because it's empowering for us to come together and unite and continue regardless of the outcomes. We have to stay together. This nation has divided Indian nations. They've divided the Great Plains tribes. They put us on our own individual reservations. Now is the time where we should be getting excited and motivated, because we know how to unite. And this movement has helped us in that matter. It taught us how to come together in a prayerful, peaceful way, and we're going to continue to come together, because it's a new beginning, and it's a new era for us, especially in the face of this administration.
Yeah, and Chairman, in terms of unity, March 10th, you're also asking for more unity. I know a lot of folks are making their way to Washington, D.C. now for a big meeting with tribal leaders. And also March 10th has also been a day that's been put out there for more unity. Any details on this? And go ahead.
Well, this pipeline is an issue that helped Indian country wake up. This movement has helped Indian country wake up, because it was led by our women and it was led by our children to say no more to this nation. We don't want this treatment. And so this pipeline and the purpose of it has helped wake Native America. And we need to be awake, especially with this administration, and we need to start to make noise on all fronts, because our human rights are at risk, our health care is at risk, our education is at risk, and we need to let this Congress, who is fed by the oil industry, know that we're still here, and not to make decisions that are going to adversely affect our people and adversely affect our future generations. So it's important that we come together on March 10th and invite all our allies to be a part of this movement. And it's not just one issue. As tribal nations, we have many issues. We have many things that plague our people, and we do need to come together so that we can address all of the issues and all the things that plague us.
And Chairman, I also understand the tribe is saying that taking this fight to Washington is important, and once again, advising people that it's not in North Dakota. Anything else you want to say on that?
I would say that the Standing Rock Sioux tribe is and always has been concerned for health and safety of people. And I don't want to see anybody get hurt. And I don't condone any violence. And I condemn the treatment that the state of North Dakota and the state law enforcement has done to people. But I don't think a stance there is going to help us get to the next level. I think it's going to put us at risk of somebody getting hurt, seriously hurt. And that won't help the future causes. That's not going to help the next generations. So we have to be mindful of what's coming, and we have to be mindful of how do we battle all the little wars that are coming so that we win big war, and that is our children have a life and a safe, healthy life, a safe, healthy environment within each of our nations. And it's going to take, I understand that we have been coming to Washington, D.C. for years, but it's more important right now because of what's happening with this Congress and what's happening with this President of the United States, that we make a presence and that we be heard, especially – when the future of our nations are at risk.
All right. Thank you for that, Chairman Dave Archambault II, Chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. We do appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us today. And folks, the phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and hear from folks and what they're thinking. We're going to go to Williston, North Dakota, to hear from Craig, who is tuned in on KMHA. Craig, welcome to the hour, and you're on air.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
We're doing good. And what are you thinking about all this? Go ahead.
My name is Craig. I am Navajo, and I live in North Dakota, and I'm originally from New Mexico. There are thousands and thousands of Native Americans that work in the oil and gas industry. People forget the fight against this whole DAPL ordeal is a bunch of crock to me.
And mainly why, Craig? What is making you say that?
Let me explain something here. It's like the chairman sitting there going, well, it's only creating 60 jobs. There are thousands of jobs that's being created in northwest from the oil and gas that creates the pipeline, that ships the oil. The petroleum that is going through the system has been there, that's being used across this country. Every day, there is already another pipeline that's in the same air corridor that's never talked about. Why don't they fight that system, too? But they don't do that, do they? It's all political with tribal systems across this country. I don't care where they're at. They come up with this excuse. Oh, well, you know, poor us, poor us. You know what? Get out and develop things for your people.
All right, great. Thank you. Thank you for giving us a call there in Williston, North Dakota, tuned in on KMHA. And folks, we're going to go to break here, but we want to hear from you. There's a lot that's been said already in this first half. We are also going to hear what people think about the camps, what they're thinking from the camps, and what is ahead when it comes to the stance there in North Dakota. You just heard from an oil worker, his thoughts on this, what it means. What do you think about all this? We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also share your thoughts with us online. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you're finding this program in our archives, you can also participate by sending us an email. You send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com, or you can comment directly on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. But right now, we're live, our phone lines are open, and we do want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What are you thinking about all this, recent developments, and what's ahead? 1-800-996-2848 is the number to reach us here at Native America Calling. Hang tight. We're going to hear about what's coming up tomorrow on our airwaves. Have you watched a friend go through an ugly breakup and you tell yourself, that's not going to be me? Ending a relationship, whether it's a 2-month romance or a 10-year marriage, takes an emotional toll. Is there ever a good way to go about it? Join us for the next Native America Calling, where we talk about dealing with or avoiding a breakup.
Christy. I'm a truck driver, and I'm on the road a lot. I used to pass the time in my truck smoking cigarettes, but then I got that smoker's cough, and I had severe shortness of breath, and I knew I had to quit. First, I tried e-cigarettes as a way to cut back. I thought cutting down might be enough. And while I smoked less, I never did stop smoking regular cigarettes completely. But then, my lung collapsed, and the doctors had to glue my lung to my chest to keep it from collapsing again. I was only 33 years old. That's when I really quit smoking. Now when I'm on the road, I pass the time eating sunflower seeds. My tip is, if you don't want to have your chest cut open, don't just cut down on cigarettes. Quit completely.
Smoking even a few cigarettes a day is dangerous. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and it's our pleasure to have you connecting to us. Today, we are taking a look at the Dakota Access Pipeline and how it connects to Native nations. 4 months, there have been people who have taken a stand in North Dakota near the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Camps have been erected, and there have definitely been developments, including yesterday hearing from the Army that an easement, the intent of it, the notice of intent has been issued. And so many folks are talking about this. Earlier, we heard from the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and his thoughts on this and moving forward. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to share, our phone lines are open. 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number. That's also our Twitter handle. If you find a busy signal, you can also send us a tweet too. We're also going to hear about camps that have been erected and how they play into all of this. And so if you'd like to share anything on that, we'll be ready for your calls too. We're going to go ahead and open up these lines again. Let's go ahead and say hello to Carol, who's in Anchorage, Alaska, listening on KNBA. Carol, thank you for your call, and you're on air.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking this call. I'm very moved by what the chairman had to say and when he spoke about mindfulness and solidarity. Right now, this is imperative. Trump, to me, I have considered this government I've named it Political Billionaire Boys Club. And what I've been watching happen, like in Alaska, he has begun to systematically break down and in some cases just eliminate laws, organizations, and people that get in his way. He has filled his administration with those who have very little or even often more one-sided experience and seem to support his extremely skewed ideology.
And Carol, a lot of this has definitely it prompted many people to speak out. Sorry about that, Carol. Go ahead and finish.
What I'm really concerned about is Trump, what I see now, and I'm a relatively intelligent person, he's ruling through fear. And I'm very concerned that there is so little we can do because he has shown that his agenda and legislative actions get more unconstitutional, incomprehensible, and unconscionable by the day.
All right, Carol, thank you for that call. We got another one. We're going to go to Goldendale, Washington, to hear from Lauren, who's tuned in on KVGD. Lauren, thank you for your call, and you're on air.
Oh, thank you very much. And mitakuyasi, all my relations. I just wanted, there's so much to talk about here. And I am the program director for a small little low-power station here in Goldendale, Washington, which is a very kind of conservative, right-wing, you know, borderline, you know, white supremacist area. And it's heartbreaking, but there are good people even on those far-right side. It's just like the previous caller said, there's like this misspeak. I don't really believe that Mr. T, the man who would be king in the Black House, is probably suffering from ADD with so many similarities to what happened in Nazi Germany. The people who are telling him what to do is appalling. Now, I'm a retired pipe fitter and welder in the union, and these are not my people, okay? I've never worked on a pipeline. I don't support the over, 11 million miles of pipeline. But it's about solutions, and that's what I talk about here. I am the voice of the voiceless, and I've tried to encourage First Nation people here for the Yakima Confederated Tribes and all around here. This is their land. When white men came to this country, they were the immigrants.
And you know, Warren, the Native voice definitely is important. Thank you for your call there in Washington. And these phone lines are lighting up, so we're going to try our best to try and get in as many calls. I do appreciate your call there. We're going to take another one. We're going to go to Eric, who is in Standing Rock, North Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Eric, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hello. Yeah, I was calling in regards to the fast-tracking BIS and the precedent that sets for future pipeline proposed projects. And another thing is the statement made by the chairman in regards to pipelines not being detrimental, this one not being detrimental to the Standing Rock. Well, all pipelines are detrimental, and that's important that we understand that as Indigenous people as we move forward with these future fights that we have throughout Indian country.
All right. Thank you for your call there, Eric, in Standing Rock. Phone lines are open. There's a couple open, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to go to another caller in Standing Rock, North Dakota, tuned in on KLND. We have Wania. Wania, go ahead. You're on air.
Hello. My name is Wania Locke. I'm from Standing Rock, and I want to respond to Craig. There's been 11 companies in 2016 alone that declared bankruptcy because the Bakken area is not sustainable. It's not sustainable to economic development. And so this pipeline is not going to bring revenue, and neither will the fossil fuel industry. It doesn't have a sustainable income or economic development whatsoever. And this is our addiction straight across the board, whether it's in Indian country or not. This addiction to the fossil fuel industry needs to end, and it needs to start with us. We need to physically step away. We need to start getting our homes off the grid. We need to start pulling in other resources to have vehicles, cell phones, that will step away from the fossil fuel industry, and that literally starts with us. So 11 companies declaring bankruptcy in Bakken, North Dakota, the biggest oil field in North Dakota, has declared bankruptcy. And as far as the movement is concerned, as far as camp is beautiful. And we peaked out at 17,000 during Thanksgiving weekend, and then 25,000 the weekend of the Veterans Action. You take that all into consideration, that's a lot of people to clean up after, and that's what's currently going on right now as camp is cleaning up. Even the ones that are declaring that they're going to stay even after the eviction on the February 22nd, they're still out there cleaning up out other people's camps. They're still helping out, and the unity in camp is very unifying, and it's really hands-on, and it really brightens your heart, and it makes you feel courageous when you're in camp and you see this unity and everyone working together. As far as the United States government, I really do believe that they did not follow due process because they terminated the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, and that should scare everybody straight across the board, because why are they not following their own law? Why do they have these policies and procedures that they're not adhering to? That's in violation of constitutional rights. That's in violation of not only treaty rights, but this sets precedence for any other pipeline that's going to go, whether it's in Florida, whether it's in Texas, Oklahoma, Michigan, Wisconsin.
And Wania, I'm going to jump in here because definitely that has raised alarm with a lot of people when it comes to taking a look at this, especially what we've seen concerning the environmental impact statement. Wania, I thank you for your call. And speaking of camp, let's go ahead and hear a little bit more about that. Yesterday, we caught up with Lakota attorney Chase Iron Eyes, who was also a member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. He was in Canada, Kamloops, British Columbia. We talked to him about camp and also the importance of these camps and how they play into a larger context. Here's some of what he had to say.
Standing Rock, or you know, the confluence of the Cannonball and the Missouri Rivers, has become an international spiritual monument, a focal point for that energy, all of those prayers, all of the interfaith nature of what has transpired there over the last 6 months, maybe even the last 10 months. And what happened there at Last Child's Camp was the carrying out of a prayer. It was carrying out spiritual instructions. They built the fire, they built the teepees as they were instructed to do. They offered the proper foods and the proper medicines that they were instructed to do. And they held themselves in prayer. Yet they are being charged with engaging in a riot. Myself and a woman named Vanessa Castle are being charged with felony inciting a riot. And so we're both facing up to 5 years in prison for a prayerful and peaceful action that, yes, you know, when I went to meet with the cops, they told me it was on private property. I told them we didn't, you know, they didn't know that. And so that I didn't know that. We needed to go talk to them, to the protectors, and tell them the nature, you know, this new important detail. But they, you know, were committed to staying there and carrying out their prayerful action.
And that was Chase Iron Eyes, who spoke with us yesterday, moments before the word of the notice of intent went to Congress. And his reaction, he was also referring to the Last Child Camp, which last week many people watched what happened with the erection of it and what happened when authorities connected with them. And Chase told us that this camp was from the thoughts of people who are descendants of Crazy Horse and who were given instructions and thoughts of doing this. And so that takes us to these camps. That's just one in the most recent times. We know over time that many camps have been erected. We named some of them. Also hubs for tribal nations, even people who are hundreds of miles away from North Dakota also made their way to North Dakota to take a stance against the Dakota Access Pipeline. And to give us more on that, we're going to go ahead and go to Cannonball, North Dakota right now to say hello to Joy Braun. She is the frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network and the very first camper, as we hear, at the Sacred Stone Camp. She is Cheyenne River Sioux, and it is our pleasure to have Joy with us today. Joy, thank you for being with us.
Tattoo wash day, you happy, my relatives.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And Joy, when it comes to camps, is there anything you'd like to say about just their role, what you've seen, the evolution of it, and even up to last week of the Last Child Camp? Joy, go ahead.
Everything as far as the camps is concerned has been done with prayer and with them with ceremony and by the spirits giving us and telling us what to do. And I think that is the main reason why it grew so big and why no matter what happens, there is a movement underfoot in this country, unifying Native nations, not only in this country, but Central America, South America, all the way to the Maori, all the way to Thailand, to the indigenous people in Thailand and in Japan. This really is indigenous rising, and you're not going to be able to stop this movement no matter what happens.
And Joy, is there anything you'd like to share about where we are currently? A lot of people, the harsh winter months, people have packed up and other reasons. Is there anything you'd like to share of where camp stands today and also the issuance of people need to leave a certain area? Is there anything you'd like to say, Joy?
Well, I always call Ocheti Shakoi. One of my friends, Stephanie Mestis, who started calling it Camp Floodplain. Because even when it was falling out just last week a little bit, there was some flooding that was going on. And so we are heeding the call of Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Chairman Archambault to move and to clean up. And one of the things that people need to remember, and Wania has mentioned this, you know, we had up to 25,000 people at one point in camp. And then there were these two huge blizzards that came, and all this stuff was left. And we're cleaning it up. I would just taking pictures at camp, and I would say about half of it is cleaned up right now, as far as Ocheti Shakoi is concerned. We're moving forward. We're cleaning up. We're going to continue to stand at some of the new camps that are.
All right. Looks like we're having phone issues. Joy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry about that. Like I said, I'm out here at Cannonball, so we have a lot of phone issues.
So we've heard. Joy, we're going to continue hearing from folks. I also want to hear more of your thoughts, where things are when it comes to the camp, recent developments. And folks, we want to hear from you, too. And maybe you're there on the ground at one of the camps and you want to speak. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Or maybe you've been at camp and you want to take a look back and tell us what it meant. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call from Rock Creek, South Dakota. We're going to say hi to Wanda, who's listening on KLND. Wanda, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call, and hello to all my relatives. This is kind of disturbing. I just heard about it, you know, and I was hoping that it wouldn't come to this. And, you know, it's not just about all of our people. It's about our children. They're the ones that we have to protect because they're our future. And
Wanda, all of this is definitely emotional. And just yesterday, as more people were reacting to the recent development with the easement, there were others who met this news and started thinking about how this connects to their tribes. And many people talked about future generations. Wanda, I thank you for your call there in Rock Creek. We're going to take another call. We're going to say hi to Maggie, who's in Porcupine, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Maggie, thank you for your call. And what would you like to share today?
I just kind of wanted to comment in regards to the Williston guy and his whole pro argument. And I'm a no dapple person. And I really think that we get away from this whole understanding that we have a right. We all individually have rights to protest, to disagree. And right now it's like we're being infringed upon, like they're creating laws against us to protest, to disagree with the corporate world. And so that's a really big concern for me. And I'm too saddened about the easement, but we knew it was coming. We knew that was going to happen. We also know that our president is invested in it. So he was losing money or lost money in regards to the protests. So now, you know, like our lessons are coming or whatever consequences. But I really think that at some point as a country and as people, we have to start looking at the ability to disagree. We never get to disagree. We either have to be put in our place or we're considered some kind of outside radical entity. I'm a member of the Oglala Sioux Tribe, and I'm vested in that because our water comes from the river.
Sure, and this area is also important to many tribes in the area. And folks, we know there's a lot to be said. Maggie, thank you for your call, and we know you want to say something too. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to go now to Salem, Oregon, to hear from Eric, who is tuned in online. Eric, thank you for reaching out, and go ahead, share your thoughts.
Thanks for taking my call. I am a tribal member. I want to say, first of all, Standing Rock has exposed the vulnerabilities across the Indian country, and it shows just how much trauma that is still in our communities. But having said that, we need to begin to think about moving forward. And the only way we can begin to move forward is break this victim mentality. We can't stand on the sidelines no longer and say they did it to us or they did it to them. We need to level the playing field. And the only way we're going to level that playing field is through education. We need to be at that table. We need to be in that White House. We need to show leadership in this country. This is the time. The Creator is saying we need to stand up and speak up, and there's a way to do it. We need to play the game. We need to get out there. You know, we can't move forward until we break this victim mentality. That's the first step.
All right, Eric, thank you for sharing your thoughts there in Salem, Oregon. We're going to go now to Waterford City, North Dakota, to hear from a caller tuned in to KMHA. It's Weston. Weston, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Thank you for having me. There were just a couple things that I wanted to clarify what the congressman said and everything. I'm actually a pipeline welder. I'm actually in North Dakota right now, and I'm actually on a pipeline right now as we speak. and I just wanted to clear some things up with your callers that seem kind of uninformed. I've ran, there's millions and millions of pipelines, and you hardly ever hear about a leak. And with all these protesting camps I've seen and I've heard of, when they're talking about how they want to, they care about the people and everything else, which is great, and every person in America has the right to protest. But when you're putting people's lives in danger when you go out there and you destroy equipment, do all these other things, and this pipeline creates a lot of jobs for anyone that wants to get on them. It's not just 60 permanent jobs. You have guys that travel 2,000 miles away from home to come work this job. And yes, it might only be for 6 months, but that's 6 months of steady income that a person can have.
And Weston, I understand too, you know, it's not easy work. And Weston, I wanted to ask you, another thing that why people are standing up is this construction is going through an area of sacred sites. There have been reports that sacred items have been in the way. And your thoughts on that too, of this side of the fight that, this is burrowing through sacred places. Weston, any thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts on that is all the pipelines that have already been ran, and a lot of them have already been ran in areas of that Dakota Access pipeline, which Dakota Access is, granted, a very big project. It's a lot bigger than some of these other pipelines and everything. And when the Corps of Engineers and they all get together and they start planning out this pipeline, they usually do consult with tribal leaders and everything to figure out where their sacred grounds are at and figure out what they need to do to go around it. That's all the experience I've had whenever. And I've ran pipelines outside Newtown. We have been shut down before because on outside that reservation, there was sacred ground or anything, but we all came together and said, okay, we'll go this way and we'll go around it.
And you know, that's also something that the chairman was talking about, that they weren't consulted. Weston, I know you don't speak for all pipeline workers, but I appreciate your call and giving us another view into this conversation. I'm going to go to Joy because we are getting close to the end of the hour. And Joy, let's start with any response to any of the callers. Go ahead.
There was just a pipeline leak just a few weeks ago, just about 50 miles from here at Cannonball. So for that pipeline worker to say, oh, you hardly ever hear this, that's baloney. Pipelines always break. Pipelines break continuously. There have been over 297 oil spills just in North Dakota alone. So this is a dying industry, and we need to change. And I absolutely believe in energy infrastructure, but I believe in sustainable, just transitions to clean energy infrastructure and for our energy workers to be able to move into those fields. But, you know, here at the camp, we do have a right to stand up for our rights and to stand up for treaty rights and to stand up for our right for our children and our grandchildren's children to have clean water. Without water, there is absolutely no life. And that's whether you're a pipeline worker or whether you're a senator from North Dakota or you live in Wapaua or you live in McLaughlin or Eagle Butte or Pine Ridge or wherever. We have a right to clean drinking water. That's why we say Miniwichoni. That's why the cry of Miniwichoni is out there. That's why we say that take the spirit of Standing Rock to wherever you are and stand up for clean water and cry Miniwichoni, because we're all standing for life against.
Joy, a lot of people are wondering about where to take this stance. Some people are organizing right now. They've published where there will be actions starting today and, you know, into February. March 10th has been issued to stand with Standing Rock in Washington, D.C. Joy, is there any thoughts you have about the call for people to stand? And there's even been a call for people to come there to the area. Go ahead, Joy.
Wherever you are, you can stand up. You can go to your city hall. You can go to your state and demand that there be divestment. We have done a huge, huge hit on Dakota Access with regards to the divestment campaign. We've also put out a call for mass civil disobedience. So if you're willing to go and stand up and say, hey, we don't want this project to go through, then, you know, do that. Be prepared, but do it. We've also saying, you know, join us in Washington, D.C. on March 10th, because this really has highlighted so many issues in Indian country. And, you know, we're uniting. So stand where you are. It doesn't matter if you're in a village of 10 to 15 people. It doesn't matter if you're in a city of 5 million people. You have the right to stand up for clean water. Look to those projects that are in your backyard and stand up against them. Stand up against the Diamond Pipeline, Trans-Pecos.
Enjoy, you know, education a lot of times does a lot of wonders. I think a lot of people turn to this program to also get educated about what people are thinking and why things connect. And so I think just understanding more about tribal nations that you're connected to is something important as well. And Joy, that's going to have to do it for the hour. And folks, I do apologize. An hour is just not enough. I know that we are brushing on things. There's plenty more that people do want to say about camps, what they've meant, the evolution of them. We do appreciate you for tuning in today, and we hope that we'll revisit this down the road. And folks, again, if you would like to continue to make comments, you can comment directly on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. You can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joy Braun, thank you very much for joining us, a frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, who's also putting updates about what is going on. And we do appreciate you giving us a ring there from Cannonball. Folks, that's going to wrap it up for the hour. Also, earlier we heard words from Chase Iron Eyes. If you'd like to hear the full interview, you can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Also, thanks to Chairman Archambault for also sharing his thoughts in the hour. And of course, all of the callers we talked to, thank you for sharing. We're back again tomorrow as we take a look at more in our Native Nations. We're going to talk about healthy relationships. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. Derek Toledo is our engineer. And Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. It has been a pleasure to hear from you. We look forward to doing it again tomorrow as well as down the road. Thanks for joining us. We're back tomorrow.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.